Richard didn't think Kaylin was aware that she was stroking the dark stone on the delicate gold necklace Shota had given her. The witch woman had appeared unexpectedly at their wedding, and Richard remembered well her words to them. "This is my gift to you both. I do this out of love for you both and for everyone else. As long as you wear it, you will bear no children. Celebrate your union and your love. You have each other now as you always wanted. Mark my words well. Never take this off when you are together. I will not allow a male child of this union to live. I do not make a threat. I deliver you a promise. Disregard my request and suffer the consequences of my vow." The witch woman had then looked into Richard's eyes and said, "Better you battle the keeper of the underworld himself than me." Shota's elaborate throne was covered with the hide of an experienced wizard who had crossed her. Richard knew little of his birthright of the gift. He didn't necessarily believe Shota's claim that their child would be a fiend unleashed upon the world, but for now he and Kaylin had decided to heed the witch woman's warning. They had little choice. Kaylin's fingers on his cheek drew his gaze to hers and reminded him she wanted an answer. Richard made an effort to slow his words. "Du Shailu is from the old world, on the other side of the Valley of the Lost. I helped her when Sister Verna took me across to the old world. These other people, the Majendi, had captured Du Shailu and were going to sacrifice her. They held her prisoner for months. The men used her for their amusement. The Majendi expected me, being gifted, to help them sacrifice her in return for passage through their land. A gifted man helping with the sacrifice was part of their religious beliefs. Instead, I freed Du Shailu, hoping she would see us through her trackless swamps, since we could no longer cross the Majendi's land. I provided men to guide Richard and the witch safely through the swamps to the big stone witch house," Du Shailu said, as if that would clarify matters. Kaylin blinked at the explanation. "Witch? Witch house?" "She means Sister Verna and the Palace of the Prophets," Richard said. "They led Sister Verna and me there not because I freed Du Shailu, but because I fulfilled an ancient prophecy." Du Shailu stepped to Richard's side as if by right. "According to the old law, Richard came to us and danced with the spirits, proving he is the Kaharin and my husband." Richard could almost see Kaylin's hackles lifting. "What does that mean?" Richard opened his mouth as he searched for the words. Du Shailu lifted her chin and spoke instead. "I am the spirit woman of the Baka Taumana. I am also the keeper of our laws. It is proclaimed that the Kaharin will announce his arrival by dancing with the spirits and spilling the blood of 30 Bakaban Mana, a feat none but the chosen one could accomplish, and only then with the aid of the spirits. It is said that when this happens, we are no longer a free people, but bound to his wishes. We are his to rule. It was for this our blade masters trained their entire lives. They had the honor of teaching the Kaharin, so that he might fight the dark spirit. This proved Richard was the Kaharin come to return us to our land, as the old ones promised." A light breeze ruffled Du Shailu's thick hair. Her dark eyes revealed no emotion, but the slightest break in her voice betrayed it. "He killed the 30, as set down in the old law. The 30 are now legend to our people." "I didn't have any choice." Richard could manage little more than a whisper. "They would have killed me otherwise. I begged them to stop. I begged Du Shailu to stop them. I didn't save her life just to end up killing those people. In the end, I defended myself." Kaylin gave Du Shailu a long, hard look before turning to Richard. "She was held prisoner, and you saved her life and then returned her to her people," Richard nodded. "And she then had her people try to kill you. That was her thanks?" "There was more to it." Richard felt uncomfortable defending those people's actions. Actions that had resulted in so much bloodshed. He could still remember the sickening stench of it. Kaylin stole another icy sidelong glance at Du Shailu. "But you saved her life."
"Yes."
"So tell me what more there is to it, then." Through the pain of the memories, Richard sought to explain in words Kaylin would understand. "What they did was a kind of test, a live-or-die test. It forced me to learn to use the magic of the sword in a way I never before realized was possible. In order to survive, I had to draw on the experience of the people who had used the sword before me."
"What do you mean? How could you draw their experience?"
"The magic of the Sword of Truth retains the essence of the fighting knowledge of all those who've used the sword before, both the good and the wicked. I figured out how to tap that skill by letting the spirits of the sword speak to me in my mind. But in the heat of combat, there isn't always time for me to comprehend it in words.
So sometimes the information I need comes to me in images, symbols that relate it. That was a pivotal connection in understanding why I was named in prophecy Fuer Grisa Ost Draca, bringer of death. Richard touched the amulet on his chest. The ruby represented a drop of blood. The lines around it were a symbolic portrayal of the dance. It held meaning for a war wizard. "This," Richard whispered, "is the dance with death. But back then, with Duz Chailu and her 30, that was when I first understood. Prophecy said I would someday come to them. Prophecy and their old laws said they had to teach me this, to dance with the spirits of those who had used the sword before. I doubt they fully understood how their test would do this, just that they were to uphold their duty, and if they did, and I was the one, I would survive. I needed that knowledge to stand against Darkin Rawl and send him back to the underworld. Remember how I called him in the gathering with the mud people, and how he escaped into this world, and then the sisters took me?" "Of course," Halen said. "So they forced you into a life-or-death fight against impossible odds in order to make you call upon your inner strength, your gift. And as a result, you killed her 30 blade masters?" "Yes, exactly. They were fulfilling prophecy." He shared a long look with his only true wife, in his heart, anyway. "You know how terrible prophecy can be." Halen looked away at last and nodded, caught in her own painful memories. Prophecies had caused them many hardships and subjected them to many trials. His second wife, Nadine, forced upon him by prophecy, had been one of those trials. Du Shailu's chin lifted. "Five of those the Kaharin killed were my husbands and the fathers to my children." "Her five husbands? Dear spirits." Richard shot Du Shailu a look. "You're not helping." "You mean, by her law, killing her husbands compels you to become her husband?" "No, it's not because I killed her husbands, but because defeating the 30 proved I was their Kaharin. Du Shailu is their spirit woman. By their old laws, the spirit woman is meant to be the wife of the Kaharin. I should have thought of it before." "That's obvious," Halen snapped. "Look, I know how it must sound. I know it doesn't seem to make any sense." "No, it's all right, I understand." Her chill expression heated to simmering hurt. "So you did the noble thing and married her?" "Of course, makes perfect sense to me." She leaned close. "And you just got so busy and all, you forgot to mention it before you married me." "Of course, I understand. Who wouldn't? A man can't be expected to recall all the wives he leaves lying about." She folded her arms and turned away. "Richard, how could you?" "No, it wasn't like that. I never agreed. Never. There was no ceremony. No one said any words. I never stood and swore an oath. Don't you understand? We weren't married. It never happened." "So much has been going on. I'm sorry I forgot to tell you. But it never entered my mind because at the time I dismissed it as an irrational belief of an isolated people. I didn't put any stock in it. She simply thinks that since I killed those men to defend myself, that makes me her husband." "It does," Du Shailu said. Halen glanced briefly at Du Shailu as she coolly considered his words. "So then you never, in any sense, really agreed to marry her?" Richard threw up his hands. "That's what I've been trying to tell you. It's just the Bakaban Mana's beliefs." "Baka Tau Mana," Du Shailu corrected. Richard ignored her and leaned close to Halen. "I'm sorry, but can we talk about it later? We may have a serious problem." She lifted an eyebrow. He amended to, "Another serious problem." She gave him an indulgent scowl. He turned away, pulling a stalk of grass as he considered the plausibility of worse trouble than Kalin's ire. "You know a lot about magic. I mean, you grew up in Aidendrill with wizards who instructed you, and you've studied books at the Wizard's Keep. You're the Mother Confessor." "I'm not gifted in the conventional sense," Halen said. "Not like a wizard or a sorceress. My power is different. But yes, I know about magic. Being a confessor, I had to be taught about magic in many of its various forms." "Then answer me this. If there is a requirement for magic, can the requirement be fulfilled by some ambiguous rule without the actual required ritual taking place?" "Yes, of course. It's called the reflective effect." "Reflective effect? How does that work?" Halen wound a long lock of damp hair on a finger as she turned her mind to the question. "Say you have a room with only one window, and therefore the sun never reaches the corner. Can you get the sunlight to shine into a corner it never touches?" "Well, since it's called the reflective effect, I guess you'd use a mirror to reflect the sunlight into the corner." "Right." Halen let the hair go and held up the finger. "Even though the sunlight could never itself reach the corner, by using a mirror, you can get the sunlight to fall where it ordinarily wouldn't. Magic can sometimes work like that. Magic is much more complex, of course, but that's the easiest way I can explain it. Even if only by some ancient law that completes a long-forgotten condition, the spell might reflect the condition to fulfill the arcane requirements of the magic involved. Like water seeking its own level, a spell will often seek its own solution within the laws of its nature.
That's what I was afraid of, Richard murmured.
He tapped the end of the stalk of grass flat between his teeth as he stared out at the lightning flickering ominously in the distant clouds.
The magic involved dates from the time of that ancient mandate about the Kaharan, he said at last. Therein lies the problem.
Kaelin gripped his arm, turning him back to face her.
But Zed said
he lied to us. I fell for it. Exasperated, Richard flung the stalk of grass aside. Zed had used the wizard's first rule. People will believe a lie, either because they want to believe it's true, or because they fear it is, to mislead them.
I wanted to believe him, Richard muttered.
He tricked me.
What are you talking about? Kara asked.
Richard heaved a crestfallen sigh. He had been careless in more ways than one.
Zed, he made all that up about the lurk.
Kara made a face.
Why would he do that?
Because, for some reason, he didn't want us to know the chimes are loose. He couldn't believe how stupid he'd been, forgetting about Du Shailu. Kaelin was right to be angry. When it came down to it, his excuse was pathetically inadequate. And he was supposed to be the Lord Rawl. People were supposed to believe in and follow him. Kaelin rubbed her fingertips across the furrows of her brow.
Richard, let's think this through. It can't be
Zed said you would have to be my third wife in order to have called the chimes forth into this world.
Among other things, Kaelin insisted.
He said, among other things.
Wearily, Richard lifted a finger. Du Shailu, he lifted a second finger.
Nadine, he lifted a third finger.
You are my third wife, in principle, anyway.
I may not look at it that way, but the wizards who cast the spell wouldn't care how I may wish to look at it. They cast magic that would be set into motion by keying off a prescribed set of conditions.
Kaelin heaved a long-suffering sort of sigh.
You're forgetting one important element. When I spoke aloud the names of the three chimes, we weren't yet married. I wasn't yet your second wife, much less your third.
But I was forced to wed Nadine in order to gain entrance to the Temple of the Winds, and you were likewise forced to wed Drefn. In our hearts, we said the words to each other. We were married then and there because of that vow, as far as the spirits were concerned anyway. Anne herself agreed it was so.
As you have just explained, magic sometimes works by such ambiguous rules. No matter our feelings about it, the formal requirements, the requirements of some ancient magic conjured by wizards during the Great War, when the prophecy about the Kaharan and the old law were set down, have been met.
But, Richard gestured emphatically,
Kaelin, I'm sorry I foolishly didn't think, but we have to face it. The chimes are loose.
Chapter 28.
Despite how valid he thought his reasoning, it didn't at all look to Richard that Kaelin was convinced. She didn't even look amenable to reason. What she looked was angry.
Did you tell Zed about her?
Kaelin gestured heatedly at Du Shailu.
Did you? You had to have said something to him.
He could understand her feelings. He wouldn't like to discover she had another husband she had neglected to mention, no matter how innocent she might have been, even if it was as tenuous as was his connection with Du Shailu. Still, this was about something considerably more important than some convoluted condition that contrived to make Du Shailu his first wife. It was about something dangerous in the extreme. Kaelin had to understand that. She had to see that they were in a great deal of trouble. They had already wasted valuable time. He prayed to the good spirits that he could make her see the truth of what he was telling her without having to reveal to her the full extent of why he knew it to be true.
I told you, Kaelin, I didn't even remember it until now because at the time I didn't consider it authentic, and so I didn't realize it could have any bearing on this. Besides, when would I have had time to tell him? Junie died before we had a chance to really talk to him, and then he made up that story about the lurk and sent us on this fool task.
Then how did he know? In order to be tricking us, he would have had to know about it first.
How did Zed know I am, in fact, your third wife, even if only by some...
Her fists tightened.
Some stupid old law you artfully forgot.
Richard threw up his hands.
If it's raining at night, you don't have to be able to see the clouds in the dark to know the rain has to be falling from the sky. If Zed knew the fact of something and knew it was trouble, he wouldn't worry about the how of it. He would worry about fixing the leak in the roof. She pinched the bridge of her nose as she took a breath.
Richard, maybe he really believes what he told us about the lurk.
Keelan cast a cool glance at his first wife.
Maybe he believes it because it's true.
Richard shook his head. Keelan, we have to face it. We make it worse if we ignore the truth and invest hope in a lie. People are already dying.
Junie's death doesn't prove the chimes are really loose.
It's not just Junie. The chime's presence in this world caused that stillborn baby.
What?
In frustration, Kaylin ran her fingers back into her hair. Richard could understand her wishing it to be the lurk and not the chimes, because unlike the chimes, they had a solution for the lurk. But wishing didn't make it so.
First you forget you already have another wife. Now you rush off down some road of fancy. Richard, how could you come to such a conclusion?
Because the chimes being in this world somehow destroys magic. The mud people have magic. Though the mud people were remote people living a simple life, they were unlike any others. Only they had the ability to call their ancestors' spirits in a gathering and talk to the dead. While they didn't think of themselves as having magic, only the mud people could call an ancestor from beyond that outer circle of the grace, bringing them across the boundary of the veil and into the inner circle of life, if only for a brief time. If the Imperial Order won the war, the mud people, among many others, would eventually all be slaughtered for possessing magic. With the chimes loose, they might not live long enough to face that possibility. Richard noticed Chandelin not far off, listening intently.
The mud people have the unique magical ability of the gathering. Each is born with this ability, this magic, that makes them all vulnerable to the chimes.
Zed told us, and I also read it in Kolo's journal, that the weak are affected first. Richard's voice softened with sorrow. What could be weaker than an unborn child? Kaylin, touching the stone of her necklace, looked away from his eyes. She dropped her hand to her side and looked to be trying to veneer her ire with patient logic.
I can still feel my power, just as always. As you said, if the chimes were loose, they would be causing the failure of magic. We have no proof that's happening.
If it were true, don't you think I would know? You think me woefully inexperienced in knowing my own power?
Richard, we can't leap to conclusions. Newborns die all the time. That is no proof magic is failing.
Richard turned to Kara. She was standing not far off, listening as she watched the grasslands, the mud people hunters, and in particular the Bakataumana.
Kara, how long has your Ajeel been useless? He asked.
Kara quailed. She could hardly have looked more startled had he unexpectedly slapped her. She opened her mouth, but no words came. She lifted her chin, thinking better of admitting such defeat.
Lord Rawl, what makes you think—
You pulled Chandelin's knife. I have never before seen you forsake your Ajeel in favor of another weapon. No Mord Sith would.
How long, Kara?
She wet her lips, her eyes closed in defeat as she turned away.
In the last few days I have begun to have trouble sensing you. I don't feel any difference, except I have increasing difficulty sensing your location. At first, I thought it was nothing, but apparently the bond grows weaker by the day. The Ajeel is powered by the bond to our Lord Rawl.
When the Mord Sith were within a reasonable distance, they always knew precisely where he was by that bond. He imagined it had to be disorienting to suddenly lose that sense. Kara cleared her throat as she stared off at the distant storm clouds. Tears glistened in her blue eyes.
The Ajeel is dead in my fingers.
Only a Mord Sith would anguish over the failure of magic that gave her pain every time she touched it. Such was the nature of these women and their unqualified commitment to duty. Kara looked back at him, the fire returning to her expression.
But I am still sworn to you, and will do what I must to protect you. This changes nothing for the Mord Sith.
And the Dharan army? Richard whispered as he considered the spreading extent of their troubles. The Dharan people were charged to purpose through their bond.
Jagang is coming. Without the army,
the bond was ancient magic he had inherited because he was a gifted Rawl. That bond was created to be protection from the Dreamwalkers. Without it, even if Kaylin believed it was the lurk and not the chimes, Zed had told them that too would cause magic to fail. Richard knew Zed would have had to make whatever story he invented
relate closely to reality in order to fool them. Either way, Kaelin would understand the rotting fruits of the dying tree of magic. Her reassuring fingers found his arm. The army may not feel their bond like before, Richard, but they are bonded to you in other ways. Most in the Midlands follow the Mother Confessor, and they are not bonded to her by any magic. In the same way, soldiers follow you because they believe in you. You have proven yourself to them, and they to you. The Mother Confessor is right, Hara said. The army will remain loyal because you are their leader, their true leader. They believe in you, the same as I. Richard let out a long breath. I appreciate that, Kara, I really do, but you are the Lord Rawl. You are the magic against magic. We are the steel against steel. It will remain so. That's just it. I can't be the magic against magic. Even if it were the lurk instead of the chimes, magic won't work. Kara shrugged. Then you will figure a way for it to work. You are the Lord Rawl. That is what you do.
Richard, Kaelin said.
Zed told us the Sisters of the Dark conjured the lurk, and that's what's causing magic to fail. You have no proof it's really the chimes instead. We have but to do as Zed has asked of us, and then he will be able to counter the Sisters' magic. As soon as we get to Aedendrill, everything will be back to right.
Still, Richard could not bring himself to tell her.
Kaelin, I wish it were as you say, but it isn't, he said simply. Her veneer of patience began cracking. Why do you insist it's the chimes when Zed told us it was the lurk? Richard leaned closer to her. Think about it. My grandmother, Zed's wife, apparently told her little girl, my mother, a story about a cat named Lurk. Just that one time she told me about a cat named Lurk, but Zed wouldn't know she did. It was a small thing my mother told me once when I was little, like 100 other little words of comfort or phrases or stories to bring a smile. I never mentioned it to Zed. For some reason, Zed wanted to hide the truth. Lurk, because he once had a cat by that name, was probably just the first thing that came into his head. Admit it. Doesn't the name Lurk strike you as a bit whimsical, once you think about it? Kaelin folded her arms across her breasts. She made a reluctant grimace. I thought I was the only one who thought so, she mustered her resolve. But that doesn't really prove it. It could be coincidence. Richard knew it was the chimes, in much the same way he could sense the chicken that wasn't a chicken, and had wished Kaelin would believe him. He dearly wished she would trust him in this. What are these things, these chimes? Kara asked. Richard turned away from the others and stared off toward the horizon. He didn't know a lot about them, but what he did know made his hair want to stand on end. Those in the old world wanted to end magic, much as Jigang does today, and probably for the same reason, so they could more easily rule by the sword. Those in the new world wanted magic to live on. In order to prevail, the wizards on both sides created weapons of inconceivable horror, desperately hoping they would bring the war to an end. Many of those weapons, the Mriswith, for example, were created from people by using subtractive magic to remove certain attributes from a person, and additive magic to put in some other desired ability or quality. Still others, they simply added some ability they wanted. I think Dreamwalkers were such people, people who had a capability added, people who the wizards obviously intended as weapons. Jigang is a descendant of those Dreamwalkers from the Great War. Now, the weapon is in charge of making war. Unlike Jigang, who only wants to end our magic so he can use his against us, during the Great War, the people in the old world truly were trying to end magic, all magic. The chimes were intended to do just that, to steal magic away from the world of life. They were conjured forth from the underworld, the Keeper's world of the dead. As Zed explained, such a thing conjured from the underworld, once unleashed, not only may end magic, but, in so doing, could very well extinguish life itself. He also said he and Anne could take care of it, Kaelin said. Richard looked back over his shoulder. Then why did he lie to us? Why didn't he trust us? If he really can take care of it, why not simply tell us the truth? He shook his head. Something more is going on. Du Shailu, long silent, impatiently folded her arms. Our blade masters will easily cut down these filthy... Hush! Richard crossed his finger over her lips. Don't say another word, Du Shailu. You don't understand this. You don't know what trouble you might cause. When Richard was sure Du Shailu would remain silent, he turned away from everyone again to stare off toward the clearing skies to the northeast, toward Aedendrill. He was tired of arguing. He knew the truth of the chimes being loose. He needed to think what to do about them. There were things he needed to know. He remembered that while frantically searching Kolo's journal for other information, he had come across places where Kolo talked about the chimes, among a great many other things. Wizards were continually sending messages and reports back to the Wizard's Keep in Aidendrill, not only relaying information concerning the chimes, but also reporting on any number of other frightening and potentially catastrophic events that were taking place. Kolo wrote about those communications, at least the ones he found interesting, significant, or curious, but he didn't give complete accounts of them. He would have had no reason to reproduce them in his private journal. Richard doubted Kolo ever intended anyone to read the journals. Kolo's habit was to briefly mention the pertinent information from a message and then remark on the matter at hand, so the information Richard read on the reports had been frustratingly sketchy and opinionated. Kolo set down more information when he was frightened, seeming almost to use his journal as a way to think through a problem in an effort to find a solution. There was a period of time when he had been very frightened by what the reports were saying in regard to the chimes. In several places, Kolo wrote down what he had read in reports, almost as if to justify his fear, to underscore for himself his grounds for concern. Richard recalled Kolo mentioning the wizard who had been sent to deal with the chimes. Ander. Richard couldn't remember the whole name. Wizard Ander proudly bore the cognomen the Mountain. Apparently he was big. Kolo didn't like the man, though, and in his private journal often derisively referred to him as the moral molehill. Richard gathered from Kolo's journal that Ander thought a lot of himself. Richard clearly remembered at one point Kolo expressing indignation that people were failing to properly apply the wizard's fifth rule. Mind what people do, not only what they say, for deeds will betray a lie. Kolo had seemed incensed when he scrawled that by not minding the totality of the actions, people were failing to properly apply the fifth rule to Wizard Ander. He complained that if they had, they would have easily discovered that the man's true allegiance lay solely with himself and not with the good of his people. "You still have not said what the chimes are," Kara said. Richard felt the insistent breeze tug at his hair and his golden cloak, as if urging him onward. To where, he didn't know. Here and there, bugs lifted out of the wet spring grass to loop through the air. Far off to the east, backlit by the billowing, honeyed storm clouds, the dark dots of geese in an undulating V formation were winging their way north. Richard had never given any serious thought to the chimes when the subject came up at the wedding. Zed had dismissed their concern, and besides, Richard's mind was on other things. But later, after the chicken had been killed outside the spirit house, after Junie had been murdered, after the chicken thing gave him goose flesh every time it was anywhere near, and after Zed had filled in some of the details, Richard's rising sense of alarm had caused him to give himself over to recalling everything he could about the chimes. At the time, he had been searching Kolo's journal for solutions to other problems and hadn't been paying particular attention to the information on the chimes. But nearly constant concentration and occasional trance-like effort had brought back a great deal. The chimes are ancient beings spawned in the underworld. The grace must be breached to bring them into the world of life. Being from the underworld, they were conjured from the subtractive side alone, and so create an imbalance once in this world. Magic needs balance. Being totally subtractive, their mere presence here requires additive magic for them to exist in this state, since existence is a form of additive power. And so the chimes drain magic away from this world as long as they're here. Kara, never being one with any outward appearance of an aptitude for magic, appeared only more confused than ever by his answer. Richard understood her confusion. He didn't know much about magic either, and barely had a grasp of what he had just told her. He wasn't even convinced it was accurate. "But how do they do that?" she asked. "You might think of the world of life as like a barrel of water. The chimes are a hole in that barrel that has just been uncorked, letting the water drain away. Once the water all drains off, the barrel will dry out, the staves will shrink, and it will no longer be the container it once was. You might say it is then a dead shell, only resembling what it once was. The chimes' mere existence here drains magic away from the world of life, like that hole in the barrel. But also, as a way to bring them into this world, they were conjured as creatures. They have a nature of their own. They can kill. Being creatures of magic, they have the ability, if they wish, to take on the appearance of the creature they kill, such as a chicken, but they retain all the power of what they truly are. When I shot the chicken with an arrow, the chime fled its phantom form. From the beginning, the real chicken had been lying dead behind the wall. The chime only borrowed its form as a pattern, as a disguise to taunt us. Kara took on the unfamiliar countenance of worry.
You mean to tell me, she glanced at the people around her, that anyone here could really be a chime?
From what I gather, they're conjured creatures and have no soul, so they can't take on the appearance of a person, just animals. According to Zed, the converse is true. Jigang has a soul, and so can only enter the mind of a person because a soul is needed. When the wizards created weapons out of people, those things they created still had souls. That was how they could be controlled, at least to some extent. The chimes, once here, could not be governed. That was one of the things that made them so dangerous. It's like trying to reason with lightning.
All right, Kara held up a finger as if making a mental note for herself. So it couldn't be a person, that's good,
she gestured to the sky.
But could it be that one of those meadowlarks is a chime?
Richard glanced up at the yellow-breasted birds flitting past.
I guess so. If it could be a chicken, it surely could kill any animal and take its form. It
wouldn't need to, though. Richard pointed to the wet ground. It could just as easily be hiding in that puddle at your feet. Some apparently have an affinity for water. Kara looked down at the puddle and then took a step back.
You mean the chime that killed Junie was hiding in the water, stalking him?
Richard glanced briefly at Chandelin, and then with a single nod, acknowledged his belief that it was so.
Chimes hide, or wait, in dark places, he went on. They somehow travel along the edges of things, such as cracks in rock, or along the water's edge. I'm assuming so, anyway. The way Kolo put it was that they slip along borders, where this meets that. Some hide in fire, and they can travel on sparks. He glanced at Caitlin out of the corner of his eye, as he recalled the way the House of the Dead, where Junie's body lay, had burst into flame. When annoyed or angered, they will sometimes burn a place down just for spite. It was said that some are of such beauty that to see them is to take your breath away, forever. They are only vaguely visible unless you catch their attention. Kolo's journal made it sound like once the victim sees them, they're partially shaped by the victim's own desire, and that desire is irresistible. That must be how they were able to seduce people to their death. Maybe that's what happened to Junie. Maybe he saw something so beautiful that he abandoned his weapons, his judgment, even his common sense, and followed it down into the water where he drowned. Yet others crave attention and like to be worshipped. I guess because they came from the underworld, they share the keeper's hunger for veneration. It was said that some even protected those who uncritically revered them. But it's a dangerous balancing act. It lulls them, according to what Kolo said. But if you stop worshipping them, they will turn on you. They enjoy most the hunt, never tiring of it. They hunt people. They are without mercy. They enjoy especially killing with fire. The full translation of their name from High Daharan roughly means the chimes of doom or the chimes of death. Du Shailu was scowlingly silent. The Baka Tao Mana blademasters, for the most part, managed to continue to look indifferent, aloof, and relaxed, but they had a new restiveness in their posture that to Richard was inescapable.
Either way, Kara said with a sigh, I think we can grasp the idea.
Chandelin, listening attentively, finally spoke up.
But you do not believe this, Mother Confessor. You believe what Zed had to say, that it is not these chimes of death.
Kaelin met Richard's gaze before addressing Chandelin. Her tone wasn't harsh.
Zed's explanation of the problem is in many ways similar, and so could just as easily account for what's happened, but being similar, it would be no less dangerous. The important difference, from what he told us, is that when we get to Adendrill, we will be able to halt the trouble. I reluctantly hold Zed was right. I don't believe it's the chimes.
I wish that were the case, I really do, because, as you said, when we get to Adendrill, we could counter it, Richard said. But it's the chimes. I would guess Zed simply wanted to get us out of harm's way while he saw to trying to solve the problem of sending the chimes back to the underworld.
Lord Rawl is the magic against magic, Kara said to Kaelin. He would know best about this. He believes it is the chimes, so it must be the chimes.
Sighing in frustration, Kaelin pushed her long hair back over her shoulder.
Richard, you're talking yourself into believing this is the chimes. By talking about it as being true, you're starting to convince Kara, just as you've convinced yourself. Just because you're afraid of it being true, you're giving it more credence than it deserves. She was obviously reminding him of the wizard's first rule, suggesting that he was believing a lie. Richard weighed the fiery determination so evident in her green eyes. He needed her to help him. He couldn't face this alone. He finally decided he had no choice. Asking everyone to wait, he put an arm around her shoulders and walked her away so he could be sure the others wouldn't hear. He needed her to believe in him. He no longer had any choice. He had to tell her. Chapter 29 Kaelin went willingly as he walked her off through the wet grass, more content to argue with him alone than in front of everyone else. For Richard's part, he didn't want to tell her what he had to say in front of others. Over his shoulder, Richard saw Chandelin's hunters leaning casually on their spears, spears dipped in poison. They looked to lazily await for Richard and Kaelin to finish their talk in return. He knew there was nothing lazy about them. He could see they were strategically positioned to keep the Baka Taumana under guard. This was their land, after all, and despite them knowing Richard, the Baka Taumana were outsiders. The Baka Taumana, for their part, looked completely indifferent to the Mud People hunters. The Blade Masters spoke a few nonchalant words to one another, looked out at the storm clouds on the horizon, or stretched and yawned. Richard had fought Baka Banmana Blade Masters. He knew they were anything but indifferent. They were poised to kill. Having lived a tenuous existence, surrounded by enemies bent on destroying them, their nature by training was to be prepared to kill at any moment. When Richard had been with Sister Verna, and they had first encountered the Blade Masters, he had asked her if they were dangerous. Sister Verna told him that when she was young, she had seen a Baka Banmana Blade Master, who had gotten into the garrison in Tanamura, kill nearly 50 well-armed soldiers before he was taken down. She said they fought as if they were invincible spirits, and that some people believed they were. Richard wouldn't like some small lapse in judgment or misstep in understanding to bring the Mud People and the Baka Taumana to a fight. They were all too good at fighting. Kara, looking anything but dispassionate, painted them all with her glares. Like the three sides of a triangle, the Mud People, the Baka Taumana, and Kara were all part of the same struggle. They were all allied to Richard and Kaelin and to their cause, even though each looked at the world differently. They all valued most of the same things in life: family, friends, hard work, honesty, duty, loyalty, freedom. Kaelin placed her hand gently but insistently on his chest. "Richard, despite anything else I'm feeling at the moment, I know your heart is in the right place, but you simply aren't being reasonable. You're the seeker of truth. You have to stop insisting you're right and see the truth of this. We can stop the sisters' magic and their lurk. Zed and Anne will counter the spell. Why are you being so obstinate?" "Kaelin," he said, keeping his voice low, "the chicken thing was a chime." She absently, unconsciously, fingered the dark stone on the delicate gold chain around her neck. "Richard, you know I love you, and you know I believe in you, but in this case I've just about..." "Kaelin," he said, cutting her off. He knew what she thought and what she had to say. Now he wanted her only to listen. He waited until her eyes told him she would. "You called the chimes into this world. You didn't do it intentionally or to cause harm. No one would believe otherwise. You did it to save me. I was near death and needed your help, so I'm part of this too. Without my actions, yours would not have been necessary. Don't forget our ancestors. Had they not borne children, we wouldn't have been born to commit our crimes. I suppose you want to hold them to account, too." He wet his lips as he gently gripped her shoulders. "I'm just saying that giving help is the thing that started this. That does not, however, in any sense make you guilty of malicious intent. You must understand that. But because you spoke the words completing the spell, that makes you inadvertently responsible. You brought the chimes into this world. For some reason, Zed didn't want us to know. I wish he would have trusted us with the truth, but he didn't. I'm sure he had reasons that to him seemed important enough to make him lie to us. For all I know, maybe they were." Kaelin put her fingertips to her forehead, closed her eyes, and sighed with forbearance. "Richard, I agree there are puzzling aspects to what Zed did, and there are matters yet to be answered, but that doesn't mean we have to leap to a different answer just for the sake of having one. Zed is first wizard. We must trust in what he's asked us to do." Richard touched her cheek. He wished he could be alone with her, really alone, and he could try to make up for his foolish forgetfulness. He dearly didn't want to be telling her these things, but he had to.
Please, Kalin. Listen to what I have to say, and then you decide. I want to be wrong, I really do. You decide. When the Mud People hunters were guarding us in the spirit house, the chimes were outside. One of them killed a chicken, just because they like to kill. When Junie heard the noise, the same as I heard it, he investigated but found nothing. He then insulted the spirit of the killer in order to bring it out in the open. It came out in the open and killed him for insulting them. I insulted the chicken thing, so why didn't it kill me? Kalin wearily wiped a hand across her eyes. Answer me that, Richard. Why didn't it kill me? He gazed into her beautiful green eyes for a moment as he gathered his courage. The chime told you why, Kalin.
What?
She said with a squint. What are you talking about? That chicken thing wasn't a lurk. It was a chime. And it wasn't calling you by your title of Mother Confessor. It was a chime. It said what it meant. It called you Mother. Kalin stared at him in startled, wide-eyed shock. They respect you, he said. To some limited extent, anyway, because you brought them into the world of life. You gave them life. They consider you their life-giver, their mother. You only assumed the chicken thing was going to add the word confessor after it called you mother because you are so used to hearing yourself called by that title. But the chime wasn't calling you by title, Kalin. It was calling you by the name it meant, Mother. He could almost see the truth of his words, inundating her carefully constructed fortress of rationale. Some truths, after a certain point, could be felt viscerally, and at that point everything clicked with the finality of a deadbolt on a prison of truth. Kalin's eyes filled with tears. She pressed closer to him, into the comfort and understanding of his arms. She gasped a sob against his chest, and then angrily wiped her cheek as a tear rolled down. I think that was the only thing that saved you, he said softly as he hugged her. I wouldn't want to again trust your life to their charity. We have to stop them, she stifled another sob. Dear spirits, we have to stop them.
I know.
Do you know what to do? She asked. Do you have any idea how to send them back to the world of the dead?
Not yet.
To find a solution, the first thing to be done is to recognize the true problem. I guess we've done that now. Kalin nodded as she wiped at her eyes. As quickly as understanding had brought tears, resolve banished them. Why would the chimes have been outside the spirit house? While they had been together after being married, exulting in their love, something had been outside the door exulting in death. It made him feel sick at his stomach just to think about it. I don't know. Maybe the chimes wanted to be near you. Kalin simply nodded. She understood. Near their mother. Richard remembered the stricken look on Kalin's face when Nissel brought the stillborn baby into the House of the Dead. The chimes had caused that, too. It was only the beginning.
What's a fatal grace? You mentioned it before, yesterday, when we went to see Zed and Anne.